Good evening and welcome to Raconteurs News. My name's Andy Young and it's been quite an eventful day. I'd like to start the show by saying very good evening to anybody who's had a lousy day out there, because my day's not been the best. My main computer's crashed, won't even run Windows at the minute, so I'm on the backup system. Thanks to Luby for letting me take over a chair just for this evening. And, well, let's hope things get a bit better. But we had an hour there from Paul and Lisa, which something a little bit different, which we haven't done before. I hope you all enjoyed that. But for this evening, I'm joined as ever by my trusty co-host, Jason Holmes. Good evening, Jason.
Evening, Andy. How you doing?
I'm doing brilliant, mate. How's you?
My bad day was yesterday. My daughter wrote a car off. that's the sort of phone call you want, you know, about 7:30 at night, is that your daughter's written a car off. But she's fine. Everybody's fine. Metal can be replaced. People can't. And so we're just working through it. She's only young, so hopefully.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, so I suppose we better move on, because we've got a guest who we've had on once before, but we've been looking forward to getting back on tonight, and that's the one and only Max Egan. Good evening, Max.
Hey, guys. Nice to be here.
The invitation was quite an event in itself, Max. I mean, I just sent you a quick message and fancy coming back on the show, and we had a quick call to discuss a date, and you quite turned my mind inside out, upside down and back to front. So, where would you like to start tonight, Max?
Oh, look, mate, anywhere you want to go. I've got so much information coming in, it's difficult to know where to put the focus. So, yeah, wherever you want to go, brother, I'm quite open to anything you want to pursue.
Okay, well, the one thing that I did pick up off the conversation, and I know you don't want to say too much about it, but I know you're working on a new film, and could you tell us about that, Max?
Well, the new film is part two of Transformation, and it's going to be looking at where they're kind of taking us now, like with this whole transhumanist agenda. I'm trying to tie it in with a lot of the new information that's coming out as well. Like, information is coming in so fast now, things are changing so quickly that, reality's kind of changing every day at the moment for people, I think. So people are becoming more and more aware of things. And, you know, the more aware you become, the more you have to shift your perspective. So it's been actually good seeing how many things have been revealed. But the film's going to be part two of Transformation. It's going to further pursue the transhumanist agenda and the horizon in the next couple of years, where they're intending to take us, and what sort of steps we can do to hopefully prevent that from happening. You know, we've got to change the direction the ship of state is sailing. That's most certain. It's just formulating the most workable ways to do it, you know.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. So, The main thing that we had in that conversation was that film you suggested I watched, and I've recommended it to a few friends who've all watched it since then, and that's the film entitled There Are No Forests on the Flat Earth. It's quite a mind-bender, that one, isn't it?
It is. It's actually, a lot of the information that's presented in it is quite compelling. I mean, I'm not saying that it's true, I'm not saying that it isn't. I mean, I've got this thing about belief. I don't like to believe anything until I've got all the evidence, you know. And it gets to a point where you know and you don't have to believe then, you know. So belief is one's attempt to, you know, we believe that which we want to be true, or we accept to be true, but it isn't knowing that it's true, you know. So, you know, it's a fine line. I don't really do believe I like to know things. I mean, what you can see from that film is some pretty compelling information about the fact that this is a fractal reality and that things are not what they seem. I think the guy put Flat Earth in there because he wanted to reach the Flat Earthers. He wanted them to see this information. And, like, there's enough information out there that we're getting to indicate that what we've been given for the model for what this reality is false. I mean, there's too many problems with it. But by the same token, I think calling flat Earth is a premature assumption, because there's still too many questions that aren't answered in that respect as well. You know, you can't go calling a definite on anything until you've got all the information and all the questions are answered, and the questions simply aren't answered in any direction. I mean, they never have been for thousands of years, but it's quite a compelling documentary when you think of life as a fractal, you know. And I've always believed reality to be fractal, and I think it's a good wake-up movie for people. I mean, I asked back in 2009, I asked the question in The Awakening, why is this Earth being strip-mined? Who's really in charge here? And the Earth is, it's being strip-mined. The whole planet has been completely decimated. And whatever it is, this construct that we live in is decimated. And this film hopefully will wake people up to that fact. You know, that it isn't just going on the level that we can see. It's also happened before on a grand scale. There is a lot of very, very compelling information in there. Now, like I said, I don't agree with all the findings of the film. I mean, I think a lot of it needs further investigation. But you've got to keep an open mind on all of these things. You've got to keep an open mind on anything. Be careful yourself into a belief system, because when you lock yourself into a belief system, it acts as a screen for all the information that comes in. And all the information that comes in, you're going to want to identify it with your belief system. And I personally don't believe anything yet. The jury's still out in all regard to everything regarding this reality at the moment, you know. Like, I can only believe what I've experienced myself and what I've confirmed for myself. And as far as I'm concerned, there are too many questions on either camp or any camp. I mean, there are five models put forth for what this reality is, and all of them have questions. So, you know, I think it's a valid piece to the puzzle that's been presented by the man who made the film. But before anyone just believes it and takes it as fact, they need to, you know, step back and put it on the table where it needs to be and see how it correlates with everything else, and, you know, see what we can come up with. Mm-hmm. It certainly is interesting, and it certainly does give people pause to think, that's for sure.
Mm. Yeah, I had a friend who did a little bit of digging and looking at that YouTube channel. It seems quite strange. It's in a Russian name, and the guy's only uploaded 3 videos, according to what's on there. Yet he's got about 3,000 subscribers, last I looked, growing very fast. Seems almost as if the channel's emerged fully formed out of nowhere. Do you think it's possibly had some help from somewhere?
Well, I mean, you've got to ask these questions. I mean, you know, if he's going to upload that video, I mean, that video went pretty viral pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know what the subscriber count was when he first uploaded it, but it had, you know, 50, 60,000 views in the first couple of days. I don't know how many it's got now. Must have, you know, tens of thousands by now, so I wouldn't be surprised if his subscriber base. Yeah, if he's presenting that type of research, I mean, it's pretty unique field he's stepped into there. So it's not really surprising that he doesn't have a lot of videos up there. I mean, that's you can look at it and you can maybe see it as suspicious, but you know, it's not really confirmation of anything. It's not really surprising.
No. And when you said about belief and knowing, what I find really difficult, and I'm sure a lot of other people do, is knowing where the hell to start, because so much of what we've been told throughout our lives is complete hogwash. And to get back to basics, you've really got to go back to first principles, haven't you?
Well, you do. The thing is you've got to be careful not to believe, and be careful not to not believe. Like, even looking at, for example, with the flat Earth, you know, you're either a believer or you're a non-believer. But you should be neither of those things, you know, because if you've made a choice to believe or you've made a choice to not believe, well, that's a belief. That's a belief system. Whether you're not believing, that's still a belief. You know, you're believing this to be untrue. I don't believe anything to be true or false yet until I get all the data. And that requires me to have questions answered. I mean, I don't want to have any questions in my head. I mean, a belief is a belief and a knowing is a knowing. It's like, you know, the sun coming up in the morning, you know, we know it's going to get light every day. It doesn't require belief for it to get light every day. We know it's going to get light every day. You know, it isn't something that we have to believe. If you're looking at information and you want to believe it, you know, sometimes you've got a stake in the outcome. You desperately want this to be true, or you desperately want this to be false. But you really should be just looking at it with a completely free of all attachment to the outcome, not wanting it to be true, not wanting it to be false, because the information just is. It doesn't necessarily mean it's true. It doesn't necessarily mean it's false. It's just information. You know, and you put it on a shelf and you put it there and you correlate it with what other information comes in, and eventually what you will determine is a knowing. It won't be a belief, it will be knowing. But in order for that knowing to happen, you need to eliminate all questions. And like I say, as far as this debate goes, I can't yet eliminate all questions on either side of the fence. So I choose not to believe anything at this stage. And I've always chosen not to believe things. I mean, like I say, it's if you know something, you don't have to believe it. You know, belief is your... it's you accepting something as true, but you don't really know it yet. If you did know it, then you wouldn't have to accept it as true. You wouldn't have to believe it because you already know it. You know, it kind of cancels itself out, you know. So, but I think it's important to look at all of this sort of stuff, and I think it's important to put it in perspective, and I think it's important not to believe any of it, but to keep an open mind and consider it all as a possibility and just throw the cards on the table and see where they fall, you know, and see what sort of a picture you...
So, Max, this video that you speak about, I've watched it. Can you give us some sort of idea of some of the points that it's making in there, and some of the arguments and some of the speculation that it makes?
Well, the concept that there was once silicon life forms that existed of giant trees, and this planet has been mined, or this plane, or this whatever has been mined, and that it's been mined previously, and that it's still being mined. And really, when you look at it, there's a lot of evidence to support this, because a lot of the structures look like they've been mined. And the thing is, you know, we find the concept of silicon-based life forms to be something alien. This couldn't possibly happen. But we're actually leading towards silicon-based life, and with our own technology, you could argue that silicon-based life already exists, that we have created it in the form of our computers, which are silicon chips, and basically the AI direction that we're going is going to be silicon-based life. If we create artificial intelligence, then it will be silicon-based life. All it needs is a body, which could be mechanical, could be anything. So, you know, we've got to really shift our perspective of what life could be. But this argues that, this film argues or puts forth the hypothesis that there were once giant silicon trees that were mined, cut down. Mines is where all the messes are, this is where all the mountain ranges are, that it was a different type of, you know, world to the one that we now have, and that world was basically mined and obliterated, and we're what's left. And there's, you know, certain things that could, you know, you could argue that this is quite a feasible hypothesis. I mean, we don't know what's really going on. If you look at Newtonian physics, it's completely flawed. It breaks down when you get to the Big Bang. They never tell you that. So, you know, that means the whole thing is flawed. So we're still really trying to find our way through things, you know. And that's, again, the problem with the scientific community is it's all locked into all these different belief systems, which are just basically, you know, peer-reviewed experiments that suddenly become facts because everyone agrees that they are, until someone discovers a new fact. But sometimes people just aren't thinking outside of the box. But it puts forth the concept of silicon-based life and puts forth the concept that it's a fractal reality. And when you look at some of the ancient tales, I mean, there's all sorts of things to indicate that something could, you know, could have happened like this. You know, reality could be very different to what we think it is. And when you look at our forests, the forests, there's no real old forests on this earth. They've all been, it's all regrowth. They've all been cut down. There's no trees that are really older than a few hundred years, except for little pockets that maybe, you know, like in Australia, there's some 3,000-year-old beech trees. Well, they tell us they're 3,000 years old. And all the other trees, I mean, there are trees that are marked. You've got to wonder how they even know where they are. You know, is there any place untouched left in this earth? I mean, Why are the trees only 30 metres high? Why are all the old trees marked? Why does it all look like regrowth? I mean, and honestly, we don't know anything that doesn't exist in living memory, really. All we've got access to is what's written in books. All these books come from the education system, which is completely corrupt, from the government that's completely corrupt. I mean, we don't know how true any of this stuff is, you know. So you've really got to keep an open mind with it all. I mean, I said that in my first film, Transformation, or the first part one of Transformation, that really, when we're looking at people's what we're really looking at is their interpretation of other books that were written by other scholars who really base their interpretation on other books written previously by other scholars. There are very few people that have first-hand information of any of the things that they're actually writing these theses on. You know, I mean, some do, but, you know, a lot don't. So we've really got to step back and question things and be able to look at all of this stuff and look at it objectively, look at it without ridiculing each other, and realize that no matter how avant-garde or strange the possibility may be, it needs to be looked at. Things need to be considered, and we need to be able to keep an open mind on all these things and realize that reality may be very different to what we've been told it is. And we lied to on all counts, so why would they be telling us the truth about anything, you know?
Well, I did notice in the film, and I found this quite compelling, is that they put forward the hypothesis. I think it's called Devil's Mountain. It's in America. And everybody will know this one because it's the one that's featured in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I think it's in Wyoming in America. But the hypothesis is that that's the stump of the petrified stump of a tree. I found that quite compelling, you know, particularly with the shape of it.
Well, yeah, and when you shape of, like you showed the inside of a flax seed, and it isn't just flax seeds, it's all plants have these hexagonal structures inside, so it's quite conceivable that that's what it could be if you can just think of it on a giant scale. I mean, and he's claiming that this is the same with all basalt blocks. I mean, it could be, could not be. We don't know. We need to look into this and see it as a possibility and either eliminate it or not. I mean, but for people to just say, oh, this is silly and rah, 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 I mean, well, hang on. You've got to keep an open mind in all of this stuff. So a lot of it was quite compelling. A lot of the stuff that he presented was quite compelling. I was especially taken with some of the aerial shots of Antarctica, some of the mountain ranges that really do look like they've been scooped out by machines, that really do look like there's been some very, very heavy and very, very large and expansive mining operations that have been carried out there. And, you know, these sorts of things, you know, need to be looked at because, I mean, some of these mountains, they just do not look like they're naturally formed. And if you look at modern quarries, that's what they look like. So you have to ask the question, you know.
Mm-hmm. On the subject of the giant trees, Max, and the silicon-based life, there's an interesting question here being raised in the chat room by Mithrin. And he says, with carbon-based life, the solvent for which is water. If there were silicon-based life, what would the solvent be, in brackets, blood? So that's something I haven't really been able to get my head around. Any thoughts on that one?
You broke up a little bit in some key points there. Could you repeat that, or you dropped out a little bit?
Yeah, sorry. Mithrin says that we're carbon-based life, and the solvent for which is water. If there was silicon-based life, what would the solvent be, i.e. what would the blood of the silicon life forms be?
Well, good question. I have no idea. I mean, this is an entirely new area to look into, and I could only really speculate. I don't know, electricity, I mean, I really don't know. It's an entirely new field. But it's just something that we should consider. I mean, there has been thought of silicon-based life, and believe there are silicon-based life that exists now in volcanoes. There are certain types of life that eat lava that are silicon-based. They live in extreme temperatures. They live in, they're called archaea. We have bacteria, eukarya, and archaea. And there are certain types of archaea which are very, very robust that exist in extremely harsh environments. And I believe some of them are actually silicon-based life forms. So I'm sure if you looked it up and looked up silicon-based life, you'd find some information. But I really would be only speculating. I don't have any information to really impart on that.
Right. Are those the same type of life forms that live in the black smokers underwater, under the oceans?
Well, yeah, there's volcanic eruptions that are going on all the time around the Pacific Ring. There's lava flows that are constantly going, and there are eukarya or archaea that live in those lava flows that actually eat the lava, and they are, I believe, silicon-based life, yeah. I think you find them in volcanoes as well. So what they would be, you just have to Google it and check it out. There'll be information out there.
Mm. Oh, on the subject of giant life forms, we've got a Society of the Spectacular, whatever it is, in the chat room has said they've heard that if all the ants in the world were twice as big, they'd eat everything on the planet within 5 years. That's quite a disturbing thing, yeah. Isn't it?
That's interesting, isn't it? That's an interesting statistic.
I'm not quite sure how you'd measure or calculate that one, but I suppose it must be doable, and somebody must have done the maths on it.
Yeah, again, that's something that I certainly haven't looked into, the calculation of how long it would take for giant ants to consume the Earth. Ooh, interesting, though. It is.
Where are you at now? Where are you at now, Max? Sorry, I'm just...
That's all good. I'm in the upper Amazon in Peru.
Right, okay. So you're quite far away then. There's
a plane flying over here and there.
It's not like you're in Barnsley.
No, we were thinking you've got Spitfires flying past there, Max, for a minute.
So no, you get a few light planes and you get a few helicopters as well. That's an army base not too far away.
What I've been wanting to ask you is, what do you make of the Mandela effect? I saw a video today, or it might have been today or yesterday, where somebody had actually got this old thesaurus, and this old, you know how it was pretty old, it had it for years and years and years, and then suddenly, you know how pages deteriorate and they sort of go yellow, and he suddenly found some white pages inside his thesaurus, and some of the things that that are on these new pages seem to relate to the Mandela effect, and I don't know what do you think about the whole thing. I find it compelling.
It's very strange. It's a really, really strange phenomenon. Obviously it's related to everything else. It's just figuring out how it's related to everything else. You know, looking at virtual reality, simulated realities, all sorts of things. I mean, I don't know, in many ways it could be just a distraction, an elaborate hoax, but then there's changes in the physical world that are happening as well. So it's all very strange. You know, it's all very, very strange. But I think it's all tied together. Even when you get back to the chemtrails and the whole flat earth movement and the whole silicon-based life forms and the transhumanism, Mandela effect, the way they're synthesizing sperm, making ectogenesis chambers, it's like they're getting ready to shift humanity into a new phase. And I don't know whether they're just messing with their memories, seeing what they can get away with. I mean, I've got to the stage of the Mandela effect where I don't know anymore. I mean, I just expect things to be different because I look at things and go, well, I don't remember it being that way. So, you know, are they doing it to make us think we're all going crazy? I mean, I don't know. It's a weird thing. It's another one of those things that I started looking into and I thought, well, this is the strangest thing I've ever come across, but I can't explain it. You know, it could be CERN. It could be any number of things. Could be shifting in and out of alternate realities. It could be any number of things. And again, all I can do is speculate, but I can't get to the bottom of it at this stage. I don't have enough information. But I'm having new people seeing me things all the time, like new things almost every day, things that have changed. So who knows what the play is. But it's certainly messing with a lot of people's heads, that's for sure.
Yeah, it certainly takes it takes a lot to get your head around it. But if you treat it the way that I treat it as entertainment. It's simply as that. I'm not taking any conclusions from it. I just treat it as entertainment, and I just really find it, even as an entertainment format, I find it really compelling, no matter what, who's doing what, or how this is playing out. There's certainly something that seems to be going on, and it's I just take it as entertainment. And I think that's probably that would be my best advice with anything, because then you don't need to take a belief or a side, do you?
Well, yeah, it's kind of like that. It is certainly, and it's going to be anybody's guess what's going on. I don't think anyone's going to be able to figure this out for a little while. So, yeah, I mean, just take this one in your stride. I know people have gone just about batty and haven't been able to sleep, and it's kept them up, and it's just, I've gone crazy from it. So I just sort of take it all in my stride and think, well, okay, this is something else to just put there on the shelf and watch with interest, you know?
Yeah, the reality that we're all experiencing at the moment does seem to be getting stranger and stranger by the day. I've noticed that for the past couple of years, and I've an awful lot of people that I talk to are saying the same thing. So who knows what the hell is behind it all, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's where they're taking us, you know. And there's a lot of big changes happening. I mean, even in our conversation I had with you the other day, when I started talking about the chemtrails and the Morgellons and where they're possibly taking us all with that, what they're really doing with the chemtrails. I mean, it isn't just spraying nanotechnology. It's the way they're changing the light. They're changing the light on this earth. They're basically turning the golden light of the sun so it has the same characteristics of the silver light of the moon, you know, as the silver light of the moon. So they're changing the light. They're changing the way we react to light. And through nanotechnology, they're changing our biology. It's like they're attempting to morph us into a new type of being, possibly even to a crystal-based life form. If you look at Morgellons, these are crystal-based structures that people are finding in their skin. And there seems to be every indication that this is what they are attempting to do. And if you look at this Earth as being, you know, being strip mined, and it is, it's been strip mined. Now look at all the stuff that we pull out of the Earth. We pull so much out of this Earth with the mining operations that we carry out. And where does it all go? Where do we use it? I mean, where are we using all this stuff? It doesn't seem like we're using it anywhere, you know, so. Where's it all going? Why is this Earth being strip mined? And it's getting to the point, like I said in my film Transformation, it's getting to the point where you're going to need to be transhuman to be able to survive in the environment that's been created from all these mining operations. So they seem to be preparing for that now through Morgellons, you know, morphing us into a life form which is going to be able to survive in the harsh conditions that have been created. And depopulation as well is a big part of it. I mean, the depopulation agenda is going ahead full steam in every possible way they can think of, through the wars, through the mass migration programs, the GM food, the chemtrails, the toxins in the water, everything. All the rubbish they've got us swimming in, you know, people are dropping off like flies all over the earth. And while it used to be being modified through Morgellons and through chemtrails, so it's really quite... you know, it's kind of scary when you look at it, but it's becoming aware of it, I think, is the real issue. People have to be prepared to be able to look at this stuff and be able to keep an open mind on every issue and not start tying all these issues together, you know, keeping things in focus and not believing anything, but just opening yourself up to consider all possibilities. Because if we do that, then we will find out what's going on. And we will find a way out of this mess. But what we're calling indefinites and jumping down these other straits, we're not going to get anywhere at all, you know. But I think there's a big awakening happening. Big awakening happening. Just people are being taught to focus on certain symptoms. But I think what we need to really focus on is the systemic corruption that's caused all these problems and find a way of establishing enough freedom for us to really find out what's going on, you know.
Mm-hmm. I've got an interesting question here from a friend who's just messaged me on Skype saying, other than making a lot of people ill, are the chemtrails also being used to terraform the Earth so that silicon-based aliens, archons, or whatever term we use to label them can live here again, possibly?
Well, I think it's more so that it will transmute us. Like I was saying the other day, if you look at the light of the sun and the light of the moon, the light of the sun is golden, It's warm, it's antiseptic, it's life-giving, it's dry. We get all of our vitamins and vitamin D and all this stuff in the sun. Sun is what plants use to grow, and they use light for food, and plants are the bottom of the food chain, so they feed everything. This all comes from sunlight. If you look at moonlight, on the other hand, moonlight is a silver light, it's not gold, and it's cold, it's not warm, and it's wet, dry, and it promotes decay, it promotes septis, it promotes putrefaction. So the moonlight, the dark, is when all the molds come out and the funguses come out and all the bugs come out and everything does its work and it breaks down all carbon life. This happens during moonlight. So we need darkness in order for carbon life to break down to create the soil so the plants can grow to complete the cycle. With the chemtrails, they can replace the golden light of the sun with the silver light of the moon and turn the entire cycle into the septids, so that we are in a septic cycle where all carbon life is constantly breaking down. Now, with the chemtrails and the nanotech and the Morgellons that's in people, this will, you know, whatever they're doing, I believe through the electromagnetic smart grid and all the stuff they're putting in place, they'll be able to stimulate the Morgellons in some way that they can convert us to crystalline life forms. Many people will likely die, but that which will be left, I believe, will be crystal-based life forms. And I'll do this through changing the light. I think this is a lot of what the chemtrails are for. It's all about changing the light of the planet, which again is about depopulation and removing carbon life. You know, because they want to get rid of the carbon life so they can get to the rest of the resources and just strip mine this earth, which is what's happening. I'm convinced that this earth is being strip mined. It has been for a long time. And I mentioned that back in 2009 in my second film, and I still believe it is. So that's what I think a lot of the chemtrails is doing. I think it's a multi-platform delivery system. It can spread chemtrails, nanotech everywhere. It can spread certain, like they're finding red blood cells and certain bacterias and biological agents and all sorts of stuff in the chemtrails. So they can use it for all sorts of things, but most importantly, they can use it to block out the sun and change the light. I think that's the important aspect of it. And they can, of course, go into the underground bases. All the silver light does all of the work they want it to do. And they can come out and see what it's like. But I think there is a definite attempt to reduce this population to a manageable amount, and to convert us into a different type of life form via Morgellons and nanotechnology and chemtrails. Mm-hmm. It sounds out there. I mean, I know it sounds pretty out there to people, but hey, when you look at the research and you look at what they're doing, you put it all together. Again, I mean, I don't believe this is what's happening, but if you just look at all the stuff and you connect all the dots, well, this is where it seems to be leading to. So put it on the table and see what eventuates, and see what anyone has to offer that may prove it to be wrong, or anything else that they may have to offer which may prove it to be right.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to, Andy, or shall I? I was just going to bring up, I didn't know if you'd ever heard of the term global dimming. Now, this apparently was covered by the BBC in 2005, and it's all about how they're blaming fossil fuels, but there has been an overall dimming of the light, which would back up what you were saying just then.
Well, yeah, of course they're blaming fossil fuels and saying it's all our fault, but really it's because they're spraying the skies. Yeah, there has been a dimming of the light. And really, if you look at it with the difference of the light of the sun and the light of the moon, and you look at the chemtrails, you look at the Morgellons, look at the underground bases, look at the smart grid, just put it all together and see where they could take it, and you sort of add one and one, and you come up with two. So, yeah, there is a definite agenda to do this, and I think that there is every indication that it is actually happening. And these reports, yeah, they just confirm it.
Mm-hmm. On the subject of changing the sunlight to be more like the moonlight, I have been looking at that a little bit, and I find quite a lot of people writing about how the moon actually gives out light that's cold. You know, you stand in the moonlight, you're actually colder than if you stand in the shade, where it's this complete opposite in daytime. So that could be quite a worrying outcome for all us sun lovers, couldn't it?
Well, that's the thing, you know. Like, we're told that the moon reflects the light of the sun. And that would appear to not be true. You know, when we're looking at the moon, it isn't actually reflecting the light of the sun. It appears, or it's quite possible, that the moon actually soaks up the light of the sun, acts like a sponge, kind of. It's like a phosphorescent ball, you know, when you put it in the light, it steals the light of the light, and then it gives off its own glow. It would appear that the moon actually does this. It gives off its own light, and it's not reflected sunlight that we're seeing, because the moon, the light of the moon has different qualities to the light of the sun. And like I said, it's cold, it's not warm, it's moist, it's not dry. It has completely the opposite characteristics of the light of the sun. So it would appear that the moon generates its own light, and it's kind of a phosphorescence that it gives out. It's kind of steals the light of the sun, or sucks up the light of the sun and gives up its own light, which is a completely, it's almost like light and anti-light, you know, golden light and silver light, warm light, cold light, dry light, wet light, you know, so it's, everything is opposite. Like I said, one is life-giving and one is promotes death and decay.
It's
beautiful, but it still does promote death and decay. If you look at nature, that's how it works, you know.
Sorry, Jason, what did you say there, mate?
I just said it's a waste of light. It's just a light. It doesn't do anything else. It's just a light.
Well, no, it does. It does, like I said, it promotes moisture, it promotes dampness, it promotes cold, it promotes decay, it sets this putrefaction, it promotes everything we need to break down organic life, which is what is needed to complete the cycle. You know, if you look at it, that's how the food chain works. And if you look at the food chain, you find plants at the bottom of the food chain. You know, they get eaten by other creatures all the way up to the top predator. But then really, where we consider ourselves to be the top of the food chain, but really it's the bacteria that consumes us when we die that is the top of the food chain. And that bacteria that consumes us creates the soil that the plants use so they can harvest the light to start the food chain again. But that wouldn't be possible without the darkness, because it's in the darkness that we break down. You know, if we were to just have bodies, you know, fall on the ground and lie in the sun, and then there'd be vultures come and all this sort of stuff, but the microbes would never get a chance to do their stuff and break the carcass down completely. It has to take place in the dark, so we need the light of the moon to promote that. But what happens, the point is, what happens if they change the light of the sun to have the same characteristics as the light of the moon, so that it's cold and it's damp and it promotes septus, then the food chain breaks down and everything starts to decay and you see the end of carbon life.
Mm-hmm. On the subject of that moisture, I have heard a lot of people commenting on how you don't seem to get as much dew on the ground in the morning as you used to. And I just wonder if that could be in any way related to all of this.
Well, it could be. I haven't heard those reports, but it could be. It could well be related to the chemtrails. It wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, there's definitely major changes happening to the atmosphere and to the way things are happening and the way dew's being formed. So, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the chemtrails were responsible for that.
Hmm. So, Max, do you see people waking up at a big enough rate? And I know that there are a lot more people that are being affected by different elements of what this cabal and what this whole game is all about and getting caught up in it. That more and more are becoming aware of there is another explanation as to what is going on other than the one that they've got in front of them. Do you think that's happening fast enough?
Well, look, I think more and more people are waking up, but nobody really knows what to do about it is the problem. There's no real focus. I mean, in all these movements that are starting everywhere, there's no real focus, you know. So if you have this big, you know, incredibly enlightening information that you share with everybody and then suddenly everybody knows it, well, now what? What's the plan from that point? You know, what are we going to do? We've got to find a way of regaining control of this system and re-establishing dominion over this earth, because we really don't have it as a species, as people. We don't have dominion over this earth anymore. The politicians have seized dominion. And, you know, all the mysteries and all the problems that we're facing and all the movements that we start to attempt to address this problem, you know, we go out to unite people to this great information that we have, but there's never a plan of how to move that forward from that point once everybody knows. So that's what we need to formulate. What is the best methodology to be able to establish freedom so we can figure out what all these mysteries are about and what all these, you know, how all these problems were created and find out who's accountable and just change things, change the direction. So, I mean, I'm seeing a certain amount of wakefulness, but no focus on remedy. No real focus on remedy. Everybody thinks that, you know, it's by waking people up to their own particular rabbit hole or their own particular piece of information that's going to cause the difference. But it's not. You need to have some sort of a practical application of this information. And I'm not seeing a lot of people formulating that. So that's a concern. But I am seeing a certain amount of people waking up to the fact that, you know, something's terribly wrong and that everything's very different to what we've been told. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, that is encouraging to hear that, Max. And obviously you're in touch with quite a lot of people, so you must get quite a lot of feedback on that score. We keep hearing how the present financial system is teetering on collapse, and we've been hearing that now for the best part of 5 years at least. Do you see anything happening in the very near future, Max?
Look, I think, you know, it's got to come down sometime, but all these things are like, they're like saviour programs. You know, everyone's waiting for the money system to collapse. They're waiting for something to happen so they don't have to do anything. You know, the world's going to change and I don't have to participate. You know, everything's going to change, I don't have to participate. You know, nothing's going to really come about. It doesn't matter what information you bring to people. It doesn't matter whether the system crashes or whatever. You know, nothing's going to work or change until people get motivated on the ground and start implementing change in their own lives. You know, it's got to start there. I mean, we've been waiting for this money system to crash for years and years. While the wars are still going, while the petrodollar still exists, it's just going to keep going. You know, and there's been various attempts to bring down the petrodollar. You know, we see what happens to countries that try to do that, such as Libya. You know, we see what happens to these countries when they try to step away from that system. So, and even by doing that, they're able to create more war, which keeps the economy going along just fine. So while we have these wars happening, it's a moot point, really. I don't think there's going to be any salvation in waiting for the crash of the money system. I think it will come when they want it to come, when it suits them to turn the power of the dollar off so that they can seize people's assets, and when they've got people in the right mentality to be able to accept the police state that will ensue from it, well, maybe it will happen. You know, it's a card they can play if they get people in the right mentality to accept it. I don't think the world is in the right mentality to accept it at the moment, so I don't think it will happen in the foreseeable future. You know, I think all of these things are plays. They're just different strategies that they have. I mean, money's fiction anyway. They can turn the power of the dollar on and off whenever they want. So it's just how it's going to work for them if they do it. And I don't think it would work very well for them if they did it at the moment. Too many people wouldn't buy into it.
Excuse me. It's quite a worry that, yeah, we're all waiting for something to happen, but nobody's actually got any plans on what they're going to do to make the world a better place. There are a few people out there, but very small groups at the moment, and I'd like to see more people coming together to start bouncing ideas off each other and get something concrete where we can move forward with it.
Well, I just keep saying question them. Just question everything they ask you to do. Question all their legislation, because they're all war criminals. They're all provable war criminals under their own law. That's why I keep coming back to Palestine. Doesn't matter what issue you've got. All of these people can be arrested right now. Every politician in England, every politician in Australia, all the politicians in America and Europe, they can all be arrested for war crimes right now under their own legislation. And then everything they're enacting can be rolled back, and then we'll have the freedom to go and discover what the hell is actually going on this earth. But, you know, everyone wants to put the cart before the horse. It's like, even with the Flat Earth guys, you know, so the whole world wakes up to the, okay, we've, everybody believes the earth is flat now, and they all turn to, what are they going to do now? They all turn to the government and say, fix the problem? Well, they created the problem. What are you going to do? You've got to arrest them. What are you going to arrest them for? What, for telling you that the earth was a different shape to what it was? Or where's the law that says it's illegal for them to do that? I mean, you know, you're going to get caught up and convoluted in this legal system. And I don't know what people are expecting to come of it, you know. My argument is that we need to establish freedom, and we have the legal means to arrest every politician in the Western world right now under their own law. And if that doesn't work, to at least establish the clarity to the rest of the people of the world that there is no law on this earth because it isn't applied evenly, so therefore it doesn't exist. And it's going to be a big start, and we can just take the whole lot out. You know, just arrest a whole lot of them, grab them all, put them on Christmas Island, whatever. They're all a bunch of criminals. And that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see people realize that there is no easy fix. There is no movement they can join. There is no big salvation thing that's going to happen until they're prepared to participate themselves by questioning the authority in their own local community and realizing that the people that are controlling their lives are provable war criminals who can be arrested and taken out of office and held in jail right now, today, if people were to stand up and call it. And once we do that, then we can establish enough freedom to actually find out what the hell is actually going on, find out who's responsible for all this rubbish, and find out, you know, how to stop all this stuff, actually put a stop to it. You know, get a little bit of power back into the hands of the people and put a stop to the direction that we're going. Stop being politically correct about it and stop thinking that, you know, these little symptoms we're addressing and these rabbit holes we're going down are going to provide us remedy. You know, the remedy's got to be in the hearts of the people. And if we were to stand up and call this system out for what it is, we could change the world in a day and we could establish enough freedom to find out what the hell is going on, and then we wouldn't have to argue about anything. I mean, to me, that's incredibly frustrating to see such a legal key there for us, but no one's prepared to look at it. Everyone, you know, thinks it's just this Muslim versus Jew thing, or this whatever, Israel versus Palestine thing. No, understanding that it's a demonstration of how law should work, or a demonstration that there is no law, and therefore we need to take the matter into our own hands, and we have the legal right to do it. Because we've just demonstrated that there is no law. Because if the law isn't applied evenly, then it doesn't exist, and that's the way it is. So, you know, it's a key we could use. It's amazing, you know, and Gaza Strip, it's even shaped like a key. It's amazing. It's shaped like a key. And that is the key that could free us from our entire political cabal, this entire global cabal. It could free us from all of them in one fell swoop. And then we could go and do what you want to do. Hey, go sail to the South Pole and see what's there, whatever. You know, you can do it all once you remove these criminals from power. And that's a mechanism we can use to do it. For those who believe in the law and believe it's all real, well, here's a legal mechanism we can use. And for those who don't, well, here's the mechanism you can use to demonstrate to those who do believe in law that the fact that it's all rubbish anyway because it isn't applied evenly. So it works for everybody. If people would just open up their hearts and apply themselves to the situation, we could put an end to all these arguments, an end to all these mysteries, and find out what's going on once and for all.
It's been refreshing to see that at the Olympics there's been quite a lot of incidents where, for example, an Egyptian karate judo contestant wouldn't shake the hand of his Israeli opponent. And there was even one where I think, it was an Egyptian who, when he was drawn against an Israeli, actually refused to and dropped out of the competition because he refused to fight him. So it's refreshing to see things like this happening. But again, the propaganda on the BBC, I noticed earlier on, and it's just, once you're awake and you're aware and you know what's going on, you notice these things, and it really is nothing, but they've got the BBC coverage of the Olympics and the backdrop into the stadium, and there was a couple of Olympic flags, and right in very in the middle there was the Israeli flag, and I just thought that the positioning was interesting, and I just thought that that people are now noticing things like this. People are now standing up as well, people that have got things to lose.
Well, yeah, they have, but still, you know, these are these are token efforts. I mean, all the politicians that are supporting this state need to be arrested, and we have the legal right and the legal mechanism to do that right now. And if we did that, we could stop the whole thing. We could stop all the atrocities in Palestine, and we could free ourselves up enough to be able to roll back all the legislation that has locked us down into this police state and is preventing us our freedom to be able to go and find out what's going on. You know, open up all these archives. You know, people seal records and say, oh, this has to be sealed for 30 years. Well, who says? Well, this war criminal says that we have to seal these records for 30 years. What, to cover up the fact that he's a war criminal? Sorry, that's not acceptable. You know, what, are you saying it's law? Well, the guy's a war criminal. How's it law? How's any of this stuff law? How's any of the stuff that they do law? Any of the stuff they're doing? Okay? They've got us locked into this ridiculous paper-based system, strip-mining the world around us in order to have access to the world around us. It's ridiculous, you know, simply because we're kept in this state of scarcity whereby we've got to... You know, everybody's arguing over this and arguing over that and arguing over the shape of the construct and arguing over all these little points that nobody really knows. You know, everyone's locked into their belief system, but nobody's got the freedom to really actually know anything yet, you know. And we're all putting a horse before the cart. We've got to establish freedom, and I think we have, you know, we have a real opportunity to do it if people could stop fighting with each other and just turn and do it. Just, it'd only take a day or a week, you know. It wouldn't take long. We would actually be able to establish the freedom to be able to put all these mysteries to rest and change the direction that we're going, you know. But we have to participate ourselves on the ground. Simply stand up and say enough is enough and question authority. Ask these people what right they believe they have to do what they're doing when they're funding war crimes and supporting war crimes, and, you know, show us why we shouldn't arrest them right now. At least give them the courtesy of asking them to please show us why we shouldn't arrest them, because they won't be able to, because they're all guilty under their own law. So, you know, they don't have a leg to stand on if you use Palestine as the key, and because this absolute farcical nature of the legal system on this earth. And it demonstrates the need to put something decent in place, or at least if we are going to have a legal system, to have it applied evenly. You know, so, you know, if it isn't applied evenly, then it isn't worth the paper it's written on. It's as simple as that. And we can either have it applied evenly or demonstrate that it isn't worth the paper it's written on. And at that point, you're going to see a huge groundswell of people wanting to change things. And, you know, we've got to do something. But I can't find anything else that will work. I mean, if somebody else has a better idea, I mean, whatever their plan is for these great movements they're creating, all these groundswell of people they're gathering, what is the plan once you've got all these people? What is your move forward? What is your way that you're going to lead humanity to safety? You know, because the problem is that people want leaders to do this, and really it's got to be done without leaders. It's got to be a collective thing. It's got to be everybody on the ground leading themselves by simply standing up for themselves. That type of a movement cannot be combated. There's absolutely nothing to stop that type of a groundswell, you know, a leaderless shift in consciousness. But while you join a movement and you wait for someone to, you know, create this huge, this push forward with them as the spearhead at the front, well, you've already lost. You're going back down that same pathway. It's just like Sheeple 2.0. You know, it's not going to go anywhere. It's got to be people getting involved themselves on the ground. And we can do it really, really easily if people simply open their hearts and step into their power. But people are terrified of it. They're terrified of stepping into their power. They really are. They're so desperate to give it away. You know, like they want God to come and save them, or Jesus to come and save them, or someone to lead them to safety. You know, they desperately want to give their power to somebody else. They are so terrified of actually having to stand up and call it for themselves, and yet they believe they're worthy of being saved. It's amazing, you know, but they're not prepared to save themselves or take responsibility for themselves. We've got to find a way of inspiring that spark in people, that belief in themselves that they need to have, because, you know, everybody is strong, everybody is powerful, there's nobody of any more value than anybody else. Everybody has that same spark of potential and that same spark of creative potential that can bring about massive change. Everybody has that, the same as everybody else, you know. So we've got to, you know, find a way of getting people out of this mindset where they believe they need a leader to lead them to safety. I mean, really, they just need to discover themselves or rediscover themselves and you discover how to lead themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jimmy's encapsulated that very nicely in something he posted in the chat room a while back. He says, so many folk waiting for something to happen and never realise that all they have to do is change how they perceive the world as individuals. And we've also got Mithrin has added in there, no one else seems to be waking up. Could it be that we are an emergent subspecies? Any thoughts on that one, Max?
Well, you know, some people question whether humanity is splitting into two. Maybe this is what the Mandela effect is about, you know. Some people have put that on the table. So it's anybody's guess. It really is. It's just another thing you can hypothetically put on the table and see what happens, you know.
I don't think we'll be a subspecies, though, would we? I think we're just leaving behind the subspecies.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't call it a subspecies, but, you know, who knows? Humanity could split. I mean, who knows? Who knows what could happen? We could create two realities from this point. Anything's possible.
Yeah, I've heard, I believe it's Richard Dolan often talks about a breakaway humanity, but that's in relation to the ET reality and the fact it's all being kept secret from our government and what technology they've come across in their discoveries there, and essentially humanity is splitting into two in that way, at least.
Who knows, I mean, I don't have much to comment on the whole ET side of things. I mean, that's another hypothetical world that, you know, I feel by adding my two cents to it, I'm simply muddying the waters because I don't have any first-hand information to go on, you know. A lot of people say it's all rubbish. A lot of people buy right into it. So, I mean, who am I to judge? I know, personally, I've seen UFOs in the sky. I've seen metallic discs in the sky that, you know, textbook UFO. You know, my question is who drives it? You know, where did it come from? Was it interdimensional? Did it, you know, was it powered by NASA? Was it powered by CIA? Was it powered by aliens? I have no idea. So I know I saw it, I know I couldn't identify it, it was an object, it was in the sky, so it was a UFO by definition, but that's about as far as I really know about it, you know. I mean, all I know about ETs is what I've read based on other people's speculations, so, you know, that's an area that I've never really touched on the shows, and I don't really offer much of an opinion on because, as I said, all I can really do is offer my two cents worth and muddy the waters, which is, you know, my two cents is all based on the speculation of others. So, you know.
Oh, geez.
It's a nice topic to discuss around the kitchen table, but it doesn't really lead me anywhere, you know.
Yes, I spent endless hours in a bar over a couple of pints discussing it with a few mates. So Jimmy's put an interesting comment on there. He says, the emergent new humanity is only in its early stages now. As the collapse of the ecosystem quickens, the new emergent humanity will be the survivors. I know.
Well, yeah, Jim's quite likely. But what form will that new emergent humanity take is the question. Will it be carbon based or will it be crystal based? Will the Morgellons and the chemtrails and the nanotech and the smart grid do its work? Is that what its work is? You know, every indication would tend me to believe that it is, and that's where it's going. There's every indication that's where it's going anyway. But, I mean, hey, that's just speculation. That's just trying to connect the dots and see where it's all leading, what it's all for. But, yeah, what will that new emergent technology be? I mean, if we don't establish some sort of freedom, then it could go in a very dark direction, but we have an opportunity for freedom, so it could go in a very good direction as well. You know, we're on the knife edge at the moment, so it depends on the choices that we make, I think.
Absolutely, Max. I've just noticed we've suddenly shot round to the end of the first hour, so this time we usually play a quick tune so we can just grab a cuppa and freshen up. And here's one from Alabama 3, and we'll be back in about just under 5 minutes. See you then, folks. And welcome back to Raconteurs News. Sorry about that, we had to play an extra song because we had a few technical difficulties in the break, but we're back now, and Jason's back, and so is Max. Welcome back, Max.
Thank you, guys. Nice to be here.
So welcome back, Max.
Yeah, I mean, last time we spoke to you, Max, I think from memory it was February time, and you just moved out to Peru. What I'd like to ask you is, how are you finding the difference living out there, and is it something you'll be looking at doing permanently?
You like it here, man. I miss my home, of course. I miss my stuff. I miss, you know, the people that I've got around me at home, but I really like the freedom that I've got here. I mean, it's going to be really difficult walking out of the forest and out of the jungle and walking kind of back into the matrix. It's one thing when you travel to foreign countries, but going home to your own sort of place and back into that sort of matrix that you grew up in, it's going to be strange. I don't know how I'm going to feel when I get back there. I am looking forward to going back, but I'm kind of apprehensive about going back as well, just because it's such a different world. So I'll be able to answer that question better, I'd say, next year. I'm going back in October, and I've got to leave again in February, but I may only be away a couple of months, I'm not sure. So see how I feel when I get back there. It seems like a really different world at the moment. The world here, it's kind of timeless. The days here last forever. Like, the days are really, really long. And they just seem to go for, you know, 48 hours. Each day seems to be 48 hours long. But then the weeks go really quickly. So the days seem like they go for an hour. And it was like, you know, less than a week. So it's a really strange sort of a time that you experience here, you know, really sort of different sort of time characteristics. I like it here, though. I do enjoy the forest. I enjoy all the wildlife and the animals around a little bit much, but, you know, you just kind of get used to it. So, yeah, see what happens. See what happens once I go back and experience that world again.
It must be pretty special. I mean, I've always fancied visiting South Africa. I've never got South America. Sorry, I've never gotten round to it. I have visited South Africa, and yes, I've really enjoyed that. But I'd love to get to South America one day. We'll have to see what the world brings up, because so far my pocket hasn't run to it yet. But you never know what's around the corner, do you?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a different world. I mean, another big attraction of it is that it is very, very cheap to live here. So that suits me at the moment in my particular stage of life. So, but it is good. It's just, it's a very, very different world to what people are used to. It does take a bit of acclimatizing for people, not just, you know, to the climate, but also, you know, socially and you know, what is available and what isn't, you know, and communication and just what you can get, and time sort of flows differently. It takes weeks to get things done sometimes, so it's a very, very different world.
So it's not going to be very good to for catching Pokemon then? Is there many Pokemon about in the woods up there in Peru?
I haven't seen any, mate, I must say, but then I think I need a mobile phone for that, and I don't have one of those, so I don't think I'm going to have much luck with Pokemon. Yeah. I haven't seen anybody running out looking for them, though, I must say. I haven't seen too many Pokemon chasers. So well, maybe they just frequent
it seems
the
to have gone quiet over the last couple of days. I did see some... Where did we go? We were in Skeg Vegas a couple of weeks ago, which is a high-end resort on the east coast of England, if you've never heard of it. It's called Skegness. Ingoldmells, actually, I was in. And I did see a few people there, but not quite as many as you'd imagine.
Yeah, I think it was one of those fads that took off for about a week, you know? And then everyone realised that, oh my God, what are we doing? And maybe it's just died from there. And everyone saw what a surveillance system it was as well, and that went viral, how much of a surveillance system it was. So maybe people just got smarter. I mean, how long would you last doing that in the real world? I mean, really, this is a sort of fad that's only going to be a week long. So, thank God it's kind of died as quickly as it came. It seems to, anyway.
There's a few more fads I wish would fade out quite as quickly, but unfortunately they're not doing. But we shall see. Maybe they'll pass in their own sweet time.
Well, hopefully the police state's a fad, brother, and that will fade out as well, you know. Hopefully this government's a fad. Hopefully God authority's a fad, and that will fade out quickly. It certainly should, you know. I mean, people have to realise that, you know, government is violence. That's all it is. All the actions of government are violence. You know, the actions of the police, it's all violence. They just come and steal from you. They get their thugs to come and put you in a cage if you don't pay your protection money. And look at what people are really doing. I mean, you know, like I was saying before, you know, we could stop funding these governments and stop supporting them with what they do, but we don't because we believe we may get in trouble for it. You know, we may get, you know, they may come and hurt us. They may carry out an act of violence against us if we don't pay them their taxes and pay them their protection money. And they use that money that we pay them to go and bomb kids in Syria and go and support the war crimes of Israel and go and kill other people all around the world. And we're okay with them killing other people with our money as long as they don't come and kill us. So basically it's just this big protection racket. That's all taxes is, and it's violence. You know, government should be there to manage infrastructure for us in a responsible way, but it's just a violent protection racket run by criminals who do nothing but feather their own nests and depopulate the world around us. And it's time we called it, you know. So, you know, that's really the way we've got to look at it, I think, you know. We've got to realise that we have to stop funding these people, we have to stop supporting them, we have to stop supporting all of their actions, and realising that it's no good paying for other people to die just to keep ourselves safe. And that's what we're doing. We're paying for other people to die to keep ourselves safe. So what sort of a system is it? Now, how is there any moral validity in this system? How is there any humanity in this system? How does this serve us in any way, shape, or form? How are we benefiting from all these wars that our governments keep telling us we must go and fight? You know, they put us in a state of austerity, so we're all in a state of shortage and scarcity, so the best option we've got is to join the military so we can go and kill kids in another country on their behalf. And these are innocent people who don't want anything to do with war either, but their government is playing the same game as our government. You know, and it's just a big scam. So, you know, we've got to stop participating in it. We've got to start calling this out for what it is. We've got to start questioning authority in every aspect and realize that there are no leaders. There are no people that have a right of ownership over you. There's no one who has a right of ownership over anybody. And that's all the government does, is attempt to exercise a right of ownership over the people who actually employ them to manage structure for us. You know, the tables have got to be turned back to what they're supposed to be. And we've got to start looking at things a little bit more clear, and then we'll start finding some remedy, and we can start investigating all these rabbit holes that we want to find the answer to once we've got the freedom to do it, because it would be very easy for us to do. You know, if we can start looking at things through the correct eyes, through the right type of lens, and realize that it's all just people here, then, you know, and that there's no such thing as authority. This is just an idea that's put into our heads in school. And, you know, and we don't need governments to protect us from all these terrorists, because it's the governments that are creating all this terrorist activity in order that we ask them to please protect us. You know, the whole thing's a scam, you know. They're creating all the wars, they're creating all the terrorism, they're creating all this rubbish. And even all the crime, any crime you've got in your country, it happens if someone's committing robberies or thieving from people, it's because they're in a state of scarcity due to this corrupt money system the government's got everybody enslaved to. So it all comes back to the government. It all comes back to legislation. So, you know, we've got to look at that and like I said, find what's going to work to take out this entire criminal cacistocracy, this entire criminal cabal, all of these corrupt governments all in one fell swoop. So what's the legal thing we can use to do that? Again, Palestine, there we go. That's the way to do it, you know, if law is going to mean anything, you know. So, you know, we've got to start really calling things from a human perspective. And that's how we're going to find a way out, I think. But I think that's really the only hope we have. And I'd really love to see where people are. More and more people are starting to look at things this way and realising that there is no such thing as authority, really. And that's a good thing. But it's when people are prepared to put that knowledge in action on the ground that we're going to start seeing some difference, you know.
Absolutely. Something I noticed in the last couple of weeks, which I found quite disturbing but not entirely surprising, and that Palestine has disappeared off Google Maps. I mean,
yeah, interesting, huh?
That's disgraceful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they said it was a bug. You know, it was just a bug. It's just part of the process. You know, the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. People need to keep making a noise about that, otherwise the bug will remain and they won't put it back. But, you know, it shows that we're losing the legal key that Palestine is providing for us. And pretty soon it won't be there. Pretty soon Gaza Strip won't be there. And I've said for years that if we don't save Palestine, in the way of Palestine will be the way of the world, there's nothing else on this earth that provides this legal key, this ability for us to demonstrate that the legal system must either work, you know, and be applied evenly, or there is no law, and that this whole thing is a farce and a charade. There's nothing else. There's no other issue on earth that can be used to demonstrate that point. And at that point, you know, if we can use it to demonstrate that point, all the sleeping masses can see it. They can see it from a legal perspective. They can see it from their indoctrinated point of view, that the legal system's a joke, that all the fines that they're paying, all the stuff that they have to do, all the hoops that they have to jump through, and all the shortage and the scarcity that they're kept in, it's all a joke because the legal system is not applied evenly. So there is no law, so they're jumping through hoops for no reason except to feed criminals who won't allow the legal system to be applied to themselves. And all they're doing is people farming and milking the wealth of everybody. You know, we have a very, very short window with which to do that. Palestine provides a key we can use to do it. There isn't any issue we can use, like not Venezuela, not Tibet, not... Now, there's all these other incredibly bad humanitarian situations that are happening, but there's no one, there isn't one issue that involves so many politicians so widely across the planet that is a non-debatable breach of international law, such as Gaza Strip. That's it. That's the only issue on the earth that provides that legal mechanism. And now they've taken Palestine on. Well, you know, we got a few years left to be able to do this. By 2020, if we don't step in, Palestine probably won't exist. If the people don't step in and you know, step into their hearts now and seize this opportunity while it's still available. And if they don't, they've demonstrated that they have no hearts and they don't care about people. They care about their rabbit holes and they care about their own little backyard. And they're just going to allow this police state to be rolled out while they're busy arguing about the finer points of whatever it is that they're investigating, rather than stepping back and looking at the bigger picture and using this legal opportunity while it's available, you know. You know, and I don't even believe in the legal system. I think it's all fiction. I don't think there is any law. But I think we need to find a way of demonstrating that to people. And I can't think of anything else that will do it except for Palestine, especially Gaza Strip.
That's a great point, that is, Max, that you demonstrate that if all laws aren't implemented equally, then there is no law, and then it's every man for themselves. And so if we could just, as a species, grasp that concept, we've got them by the scrotum, and then we can just... because we're not talking about people that are... Most of the people that get to the top are the ones that are sort of like... I don't know, they just seem a bit...
The thing is, talking about this sort of stuff, and you start talking about this conspiratorial view of the world and the way we look at it and the way all these crimes are being committed... People don't understand, and they think you want a big revolution. They think, oh no, he's an anarchist. You know, they don't understand what anarchist is, which is basically a violent terrorist, you know, like someone who doesn't believe in government and believes that we should be able to govern ourselves, which we would if we were, that's what an anarchist is. But people hear all this stuff we say and they think, oh, this guy just wants violence in the street and he wants to tear down the government. He's just got a chip on his shoulder. What we're talking about, what we're talking about is basic decency and the even application of law, if it is to exist at all. You know, and if it isn't to be applied evenly, then how does it exist? And if you use this approach, I mean, let's face it, one of the biggest problems we've got in getting through any of this is the brick wall of stupidity, which is our police force, which seem to do anything the government says, and who are so caught up in adhering to points of law because they think this stuff's real. Well, okay, if you guys think it's real and you're so eager to oppress the people, well, what if it can be demonstrated to you police officers that the people that you're enforcing this legislation, the people who are writing it, are provable war criminals? Well, you have a responsibility to enforce law to arrest these people, get them out of office, and roll back all the corrupt and illegal legislation that they've enacted, state of normality and protect society. You know, so you're going to find a lot of police breaking ranks and a lot of politicians breaking ranks because you're giving them something that they can identify with because they believe the legal system's real. And they think that we, as people who are speaking out against the government, are just law-breaking anarchists. And by using this, we're demonstrating not. We're not law-breaking anarchists at all. All we're asking for is the even application of law and identifying where the source of all of this destruction and mayhem we're seeing on the earth comes from, which appears to be coming from, if you follow... it appears to be coming from politicians who are all in breach of international law to be why they are doing this and getting away with all of this stuff. So now we've what the root cause of this problem is. What we are asking for is the even application of the legal system that is supposed to exist on this earth. Because if this is not to be applied evenly, then it demonstrates to us that there is no law and that you police officers and you politicians are simply not prepared to adhere to the law. So therefore, how are you able to even inflict any of your law or legislation upon us? If you're going to be cherry-picking it and you're going to stand there and say that you're adhering to the letter of the law, well, obviously you're not. Because all of this legislation has been enacted by provable war criminals under your own law. So, you know, all we're asking for is even application. We're asking for consistency. And this will demonstrate to a lot of these people, and you'll find a lot of these police officers and all these politicians are going to look at it and go, well, actually, this makes sense, and they're going to break ranks. Because, you know, let's face it, I mean, not all cops are corrupt. Not all low-level politicians are bad. Some of these people probably joined the system because they actually wanted to make a difference. And now they're caught up in that system, which is corrupt, so they're forced to operate within these corrupt anywhere. Because they're not looking above it to the root cause of the whole problem, which is the fact that the perps are the ones right at the top, who are all perps as well, and all have, they're all in breach of international law and of their own law, which renders all their legislation invalid, you know. So it's just a way of looking at it and a way of empowering people who are still asleep in a language that they can understand and getting some of these police and politicians to break ranks and start seeing the sense of looking at, realizing that we're not a group of people wanting to have violence. Or all we're asking for is even application of law and accountability for the real criminals on this earth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We got a question in the chat room as well from Mithrin. I don't know what sort of historian you are, but the question from Mithrin is, was there ever a point in history when we were not enslaved in this way? So I think what he's trying to say is there ever a point where we've not been enslaved? But I suppose history of this planet, the written history, doesn't go back very far, does it?
Well, you know, I can't find anywhere in recorded history that we haven't been in a state of subservience to something. I mean, even you go right back to, you know, the Sumerian texts and stuff. I mean, look at Sumer, all those ancient texts that they found in the city of Sumer. These were like the Goldman Sachs of the ancient world who invented banking. You've got all Egyptian mythology. It always goes back to some form of hierarchy. So, I mean, I can't find anywhere where we're not controlled by somebody, you know. But, I mean, I've got to question all history, though. I mean, the mainstream timeline, if the timeline we're offered by mainstream archaeology is correct, as far as Earth being 4.6 billion years old and all this sort of stuff, then we've been here, there's every indication we've been here for millions of years. But really, when you look at it, like I said earlier, all we can really know about history is that which exists in living memories. So how true is all of the information we've been presented by mainstream archaeology? You know, we never really go and research things for ourselves. We just take things at face value when we're told about this stuff. Oh, rock formations are formed this way and that way, and this is what happens and that's what happens. Well, how do we know? We didn't actually go and do the research for ourselves. We just took it at face value because it was written in a book. You know, we just tend to believe what's written in books. But all these books come from the education system, which has been used to brainwash us. It all has been put in place by these governments that are doing all these terrible things to us. So how reliable is any of the information we've got regarding history? You know, all we can really rely on is that which exists in living memory. And ultimately, that's it.
Yeah,
So, I mean, it's the same thing. It's just getting information from books, you know. I'm really starting to step back from all of history and everything that I think I know about history. And what I know is that everything I've told us is wrong. I've proved that myself just through my own travels. But where it all comes from and how old these things are and what really happened, it's anybody's guess. And until we to stop all the speculation and stop all the argument and get access to what archives there are, which I'm sure are stored in places such as the Vatican and other places, then all we can do is really speculate. We're never going to know, you know. So I question every single aspect that I'm given. I question every single aspect of science that I'm given. I question everything that I'm given these days. I'm really only prepared to believe that which I can prove for myself and that which I've experienced for myself. You know, the world is changing so much and there's so much information coming to light that it's anybody's getting on. But in amongst it all, with what's happening, like I said, I think we have an opportunity for freedom. And I think we're losing that pretty quickly. And I think it's important that people realize that it's up to us to make the change ourselves. And all we have to do is step into who and what we are and stand up and say, hey, you know, we've had enough of this. You're all criminals anyway, provable. So you're all gone. We're going to change things from this point. And whatever that new future looks like, well, we'll figure it out once we've stopped the direction that we're going. You know, who knows what the new world will be, whatever we create, you know. We don't want the new world order, but we certainly want a new direction than the one we're going. And we don't want the old world order to remain the way it is. We've got to identify that it's been this old world order that's caused all this problem. And it's time for humanity to individually step into their own power and realize that we don't need government at all. We can rule ourselves. We can control our own lives. We can do things properly if we're prepared to respect each other. You know, it may take a little while for us to do it. It might take a little bit of education. It might take a generation before we can teach people what they really are. I mean, we've certainly got to get rid of all these toxins out of the food and out of the environment so people's minds and brains open up a little bit so they can think a little bit clear, get rid of all this fluoride and all of this stuff. But how do we do that? You know, we've got to take control of the system in order to do any of that. And the only way we're going to do any of that and take control of the system is to remember that we have the power to do it if we simply stand up and call things out for what they are. I mean, I've been saying this for 8 years. I really have. I've done these shows over and over again where I've just suggested people just remember who and what they are and question authority, ask why any of this legislation is valid. Just ask the question, because by asking the question, you other people are hearing it, and they'll start asking the question as well. And you're not insulting, you're not accusing, you're simply saying, look, it appears that you're a war criminal. Can you please show me why you couldn't be prosecuted for the war crimes you're obviously supporting? You know, because you are. Now, I'm not accusing you of anything, I'm just looking at your actions. 1 and 1 equals 2. Here's the Geneva Convention, you're in breach of it. Why are you in office? Why aren't you being arrested? Why isn't everybody else asking this question? Why are we believing we have to follow your rules when you're a provable criminal under your own law? And if you're not, then how's your law valid? I mean, what are they going to say when you ask that sort of stuff? And everyone starts doing that. Everyone starts asking these questions in their own community. You're going to see this system slow down pretty quickly. And you're going to see a lot of these rabbit holes opening up. You're going to see a lot of these questions being answered. And you're going to see a lot of people stepping into their power and feeling like they can actually make a difference. You know, they can actually be what they thought they were born to be. You know, you're going to find this spark going off in people's minds once they have this empowerment. So that's what I'd love to see, you know. And that's really, I think, the only way it's going to happen. There can be no leaders in any of this. People just have to get involved on the ground, put all the knowledge that they're getting into practice in their own community.
I think you hit something very important on the head there, Max. I think people need to know who they are. You know, who they really are, because we've all got a bit of an idea, but like you say, so much of written history is complete bunkum, and because of that, it makes it very difficult to answer that question, who am I, don't you think?
Well, yeah, because we don't have any real idea of our past. You know, we have a vague idea, but no real idea. And, of course, they've kept it that way as well on purpose, I believe. I mean, they kept it so it's all mystery, so we can just keep arguing about it for years on end. And everyone's arguing about the finer points. They're not realizing the fact of why is the mystery there? Why is there a point there that we're arguing about? It's because information has been hidden from us. Why is the information that's been hidden from us? Who has hidden it from us? Why can't we get to this information? Oh, legislation, government. They do this for public protection. What do you mean public protection? How is keeping information from people and keeping everything so cloak and daggerish, how is this protecting anybody? You know, so they do it all on purpose to keep us arguing about finer points. That's why with any good conspiracy, you only get little bits of it come out. There's never any real answer. There's never anything you can say absolutely concrete, for sure, with all doubt removed. There's always a niggling question, regardless of what it is, because that's the way they play it, because it just keeps us locked up in argument, and we're not paying attention to what's going on around us, and we're not looking at why the problem exists in the first place. It's because legislation prevents our access to information. And this legislation is put in place by people who are provable criminals under their own law and can all be rolled back if we can simply identify the fact that they're criminals and call it for what it is. Suddenly we can have a completely new reality, and suddenly all of these doorways are going to be open, all these rabbit holes are going to be free to explore. And we'll find some answers to all these age-old mysteries. But, you know, we can't sit here and think we've got the answer to a mystery and then go, okay, I've got the answer. Then what now? What are you going to do now? What are you going to do? Turn to the government and say, fix it. Turn to the military or the police or whatever and say, fix it. If it's a mystery that's uncovering some sort of activity that they're involved in, they're not going to help you very much. What are you going to do? What's the methodology that you've got in place to deal with this once you've opened this rabbit hole up? That's what I mean. No one's got a plan. No one's prepared to establish freedom before opening up the rabbit hole and eliminating all question to the debate that they're entered into. They're so interested in being locked into the debate and presenting their side, but then they don't have any game plan from that point. So my argument is, let's establish freedom while we have the opportunity to. Opportunity is fast disappearing from our grasp, and once we've got freedom, then all of these rabbit holes will be open, and the world will be our oyster, and we won't have to debate or argue anymore. We can find out what is really going on, because I'll tell you, whatever's going on is very, very different to what we're being told.
Absolutely, Max. And for anyone who's not really certain how they can stand up to the system and how they can question it in their own little individual way, I would suggest if you're anywhere near Nottingham or you can get to Nottingham this weekend, on the Saturday the 20th, there's a meeting at the Navigation Inn, which is near the Broadmarsh Centre in Nottingham. We're going there and... I know Rob Freeman will be there. I think Kevin Mark will be there. I'm not sure if Paul Webster will be there, but there's a lot of guys who are doing a lot of great work challenging the system in the courts, and I'm sure if you're able to get along there, you'll meet some great people who will inspire you, and also you'll be able to get up some great ideas for how you can make a difference yourself. It's a shame.
That's really good. That's great that people are doing that and getting involved on the ground. That's really good to hear.
Yeah, it's a shame you're not a bit closer, Max, or I'd invite you.
yeah, a little bit far away at the moment, brother. A little bit far to go just for the day, I think.
Yeah, and the good thing about it is when you get together, it's a lot different to speaking to somebody on the internet over Skype or something like that. When you get together, you get face-to-face, you can look people in the eye, you can see... the determination inside them, and you can see. I believe if you look at somebody in the eye, you can see their actual intent, and you can see that there are other people out there, and you're not on your own.
Well, yeah, you know, it's good for solidarity. It's good knowing that there's people out there who feel the way you do. What I'd like to see in a lot of these protests is like when the speakers get up and speak. You know, you'll have a march somewhere, and then people get up and they talk. Very often it's just kind of rhetoric and they're just giving a speech to fire the crowd up and we all sign a petition or whatever. I'd like to see people organising action to take it forward by identifying a root cause of the problem, realising all this legislation just created the situation that's been enacted by war criminals to begin with, and that they have a legal mechanism they can use to not put a band-aid on the symptom that's been, this problem has created, but to take it out by taking the politician legislation to happen, taking them out of office and having them charged for their actions, which would thereby give you the opportunity to roll back all the legislation which has allowed this problem to happen to begin with. Now, if people aren't prepared to do that, the problems are just going to keep manifesting, or the symptoms are just going to keep manifesting. You know, we've got to start realizing that these politicians do not have the authority to do what they're doing, to write the legislation they're doing. That I believe that by writing something on a piece of paper, it gives them the ability to come and trash your environment, to trash your neighborhood, to steal from you, to give control of your life to some corporate entity that claims the same rights as a human being, and all this stuff. It's rubbish. It's fiction. It's just stuff they write on paper, and it's not acceptable. And all of these people, with all these this damage and hardship they're causing to the community, all these people can be charged under their own legislation for the international crimes that they're supporting right now, which renders all their legislation invalid. So I'd like to see talks like that happening at some of these protests and any of these meetings that you're going to, just putting this out there for people to plant this seed in their minds so they can step back a little bit from the symptom that they're dealing with and realize that there's a bigger picture. And if they can look at it on a more, you know, worldwide, global aspect, then they're going to see that it's all part of the one problem of systemic corruption, which is, you know, completely, it's every country. I mean, it's all interrelated, the whole thing. It's one big hornet's nest, you know. And we have a legal mechanism we can use to circumvent all of these local issues if we go for the root cause. And until we do that, it doesn't matter. We can put band-aids on symptoms all we want. All we're doing is playing by the legislation that these people write, and these people are all, it's all invalid anyway. So why are we even going by the rules that they give us? Shouldn't we first be establishing the validity of their rules by establishing whether or not this person is suitable to hold the office that they hold, because their actions indicate that they're not under their own law? So shouldn't we first be looking at that? Isn't that the best way to look at one of these problems, you know? First establishing the legislation, whether the legislation that allowed the problem to be created is valid first. Because if the legislation was enacted by someone who's a war criminal in breach of their own law, then how is it valid, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've got a suggestion from the chat room here that perhaps we should be seeking to create a political party funded by the people rather than funded by the corporations. But I'm a little bit jaded about political parties and wonder whether we actually need to get rid of them altogether and perhaps even say that anyone who belongs to a political party is banned from holding public office, because they don't serve the people who they're supposed to serve, they just serve the party, don't they?
That's the problem, is the party system, you know. I mean, if you create another party with the intention of entering into government, with the intention of reducing it to the point that we no longer need it, well, that would be honourable, but you find that once people get into that position and they start getting these large salaries, and things just tend to go a little bit strange at that point. I mean, it may work for someone, you know, as a stepping stone for people who believe in the political system and they believe they need something to vote for or whatever. If you could find the people who had enough integrity to actually get in there and keep their intention true. But, you know, once you enter into that system, it's chances are things are going to go pretty wrong. So, I mean, obviously we need some form of government at the moment. Even if we were to declare all of these politicians war criminals and have them all arrested, we need people in there to manage the infrastructure at the moment, and get us back to a point, you know, like some sort of a transitionary mechanism, get us back to a point where we don't need government. We have to, the first thing you'd have to do would be like change the monetary system, change the education system. there's two things you need to do, and probably the health system. But you need to re-educate people, actually teach people how to think again, teach people about life again, teach people, you know, what's really going on here. But we need to open up the books to everything and see exactly what's going on. It'd be a huge transition, but we would need some sort of transitionary mechanism at the moment. There's no way you'd just be able to go and arrest all of these politicians and think we're going to go and turn to anarchy and turn to voluntarism in a day. It's not going to happen because most people simply don't know how to look after themselves. So that needs a mass re-education of society. But what we need to identify is that we need to stop the direction we're going. So we need to have these people arrested. And even by doing that, you know, even if we were to arrest all the politicians who are involved in all this nefarious activity and elect new people to put in their place temporarily, I think simply the action of public stand that we just made would demonstrate to who we've put in there that we mean business. And what we're asking for straight away is a complete repeal of this monetary system, a complete repeal of rolling back of the education system, and complete transparency to everything that's brought us to this point. We want access to all of the books, and we want to know who's to blame and who's greasing what palms. You know, we want freedom. We've got to put certain guidelines in place. I think that if we did that, if we had a huge public outcry and demonstrated that we've had enough, and we're taking these people out of power, I think whoever gets in there in this transitionary period will know we mean business anyway. So I think that'd be a good thing. I mean, it's a start anyway. I mean, I don't know what the future looks like, but I know we have to stop this the direction that we're going now. Yeah, helicopter?
Yeah, we can hear that, Max. Yeah, Patrick, so yeah. You still have the civil service running things. That's the problem. We had no government in ERA for 7 weeks. The country didn't come to a standstill. I mean, we've seen with the American government being shut down allegedly because they ran out of money, and everything just went fine. Didn't people suddenly realise then, hang on, we don't need these psychopaths?
Yeah, we don't. We don't need these people, you know, ruining things. I mean, if we need someone there to, I mean, even a council, just a council of people to say, okay, well, this is the type of money system we're going to use now. Well, this is the type of education system we're going to use now. Just something. I mean, something. I mean, nobody really can put forth the perfect model, I don't think. I mean, people do, but it's all a revamping of the whole thing. I mean, I've often said we don't even really need to revamp this system. We don't even need to really rebuild this system. All we need to do is change our perspective and change the way we interact with people. Mm-hmm. I mean, if people did what was right in all that they do, the right thing in all that they do, and did what was right for everybody, not what was right for them personally, and didn't do what they did based in profit, then the system would change around us. It would change by default. And like you say, we don't need the government for the trucks to run and the trains to run on time and all the groceries to be shipped. I mean, it still works without the government. All the government seems to do is bring in legislation to control our actions and to start wars and depopulate. So, you know, if we need some sort of group of elders or council or whatever to, you know, oversee the implementation of a proper legal system or a proper education system and a proper money system, well, I'm sure that wouldn't be too difficult. But, you know, that's the problem with even talking about all this sort of stuff. Everyone says, okay, well, if we don't have this, then what's your plan for the future? But it's a collective thing. I mean, it's what we want. Yeah, and even when you look at Libya, now, Libya was an interesting thing. I mean, they called Gaddafi a tyrant. But what he'd done, when he took power, he kind of stepped back and he allowed each individual community to have their own local group and to have their meetings and make up their mind on what they wanted for their local community, and then he would fund it and finance it. So why not that? I mean, why not something like the old Vedic system of the kin domains or whatever? I mean, there's all sorts of different ways of doing things. But however we do it, there's going to need to be a transitionary period where people get re-educated, and what they need to be re-educated in is back to humanity. People need to relearn what it is to be human, because at the moment they're being taught that what it is to be human is to be a functional little cog in a big machine and to know how to make a good business sense of your life. So that's really not what it's about at all. So that may take a generation, but whatever we end up with, it's got to be better than the way we're going. You know? And, but again, it's got to come from people on the ground. You know, it's the only way we're going to get out of this, I think.
So are those helicopters come for you? Because there seems to be lots going over the top of you at the moment.
Yeah, all for me, mate. No, that was the same helicopter, actually. I flew over, I heard it go off into the distance and sort of wander around, and then just flew back over again.
Mm-hmm. Ah, you see, they're after you in Peru. You best get
this apartment. There is a military base not too far from here, so you do get a little bit of activity at certain times of the day.
We've got a comment in the chat room from the captain, and he's suggesting is ban usury, the world would change overnight. And I'd like to add that we should all start growing hemp as well, because that would alleviate the food shortages and clean the planet.
Well, yeah, banning usury would be a great idea, and growing a great idea. I mean, the banning of hemp is really a crime against humanity. This is our companion plant. This is the only plant that we have an endocrine system in our body for. There isn't any other system that we have an endo system in our body for, any other plant. So when they banned hemp, we all started getting sick. All these exotic diseases started manifesting, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, all this sort of stuff, multiple sclerosis, cancer, cancer started skyrocketing. All these weird illnesses and things started manifesting once they made cannabis illegal. And, it should be, all the laws regarding cannabis should be repealed immediately, should be completely decriminalised, and even just all repealed, just leave it alone, no laws surrounding it at all. You know, we don't need laws surrounding it, it's a God-given plant, it's our companion plant, it's never killed anybody in all of its recorded history, so there's no reason for it to be outlawed. In fact, outlawing it, I believe, constitutes a crime against humanity.
Max, I think I heard you talking about what was the plant that you were talking about? Something that you took and it made you spew your scrotum up for like first 40 minutes, and then you felt like re-energized. What was that?
That's not actually a plant. That's cumbo. That's frog venom. There's a frog in the rainforest, which is the giant green tree frog, which has a very, very toxic venom that it produces on its skin. And if that's applied directly to the lymph system, it has the effect of basically supercharging your immune system. You get violently ill for about 40 minutes because you've kind of been poisoned. But it gets right down into the very, very depths of your stomach, and you pull out stuff that's been there since you're a kid, like just get rid of these really, really deep toxins, really deep bowels, deep green bowels, I mean, all the colours of the rainbow. So you feel incredibly energised getting all these poisons that are so deeply buried in your stomach and buried in your system. You get them all out, and it has the effect of basically supercharging your immune system, and you're left with an incredible feeling of clarity and focus, and it's a very, very powerful medicine, but it's quite a horrendous experience going through the experience. But I found it very beneficial. I had meningitis about a year ago, which is a very, very slow recovering illness. Yeah. And I'd been sick so long with it that I'd forgotten I was sick, sort of thing, you know. It just became my normality that I was that run down. And then when I had the combo, suddenly I was so energized the next day that I found it profound. So I recommend a lot of other people have it, and I've seen an incredible difference in people's lives that have had this stuff. So it's kind of bizarre thinking of taking a frog venom, but I found it highly beneficial. I mean, not something you do all the time, but if you do this maybe 3 or 4 times a year, you'll find that your immune system and you just don't get sick, and it's worked for everybody I've seen use it anyway. I mean, there's some people who probably shouldn't use it, people that are on medication or have heart problems or whatever, but for people generally, it's quite a beneficial medicine.
Well, I've not heard of that. That's fascinating, Max. Patrick's saying he thinks there's a connection to Alzheimer's with the promotion of low-fat butter spreads and margarine. Because they've been pushing this low-fat thing down us for years and years, and we need fat, don't we?
Well, we do. We need fat, but I think a lot of it is the aluminium and stuff. You'll find there's probably traces of aluminium in a lot of those products as well. And aluminium is very, very much responsible for Alzheimer's, I think. Here comes our helicopter again. Aluminium
spot. They're taking an interest in you today, Max.
Well, as long as they don't, land and then carry away,
then they'll be okay. To land around here.
No, that's an exclusive we wouldn't like to have. We'd we'd rather Max stay safe for his return to Australia. But
that's all good.
We're coming to the end of the show now, Max. So could you please give out the links of where people can find you and find all your information and keep up to date with what you're doing?
You'll find everything about me and all the links to what I'm doing on thecrowhouse.com is my website. There's also another site called fullcircleproject.net, which you can use to form local action groups in your community as well. That's something that I'm trying to encourage with people. Just get involved on the ground, and we can start a leaderless movement, which is basically simply a shift in people's perspective of how they approach this. And, realize that you have the power to make change in your community. There are no leaders. There is no such thing as authority, especially if people are using the authority that you perceive they have to interfere with your life, then it's simply not valid. And we have to question it, and we have the means to do it. So involved. But yeah, you'll find everything about me at thecrowhouse.com, and you'll find links to my YouTube channel and all the stuff there. So yeah, it's all there. It's all for free. There's nothing there to buy. There's 6 films I've made. There's 8-9 years of radio archives there of me talking about all this stuff. So yeah, please do share. It's a resource hub, and if you get involved in the community, you can make a difference, folks. So don't think that it's just all about clicktivism. It's not just about clicking and liking videos and liking Facebook posts. It's about getting involved and applying what you know to the reality that you're living in. So please do so, and together we'll make a difference. And thanks for asking me on, guys.
And also, just to remember that watch all different variety of things and don't get dragged into them. Just take them as entertainment, take them as information, take them as they're presented. But don't have a belief and don't attach yourself and identify yourself with one particular theory or belief.
Yeah, be careful not to believe and be careful not to not believe. You know, don't be a believer or a non-believer. Just be open to all the information and consider it all as possible, because we don't really know what's going on at all. The information that we're getting comes from questionable sources on all counts, and we've been lied to on every single aspect of our lives. So what makes you think that they're telling us the truth about anything? So just look at everything with an open mind, and just don't be too unreasonable with people, and let's see what the future unfolds.
Thanks for that, Max. It's always great to chat with you, and I do hope you'll come back and join us again, possibly when you get back to Oz and when time allows. I'd like to say a big thank you to Jason, as always, and thank you to all our listeners, because without you, we'd be just talking to ourselves. We'll be back Thursday night, and this Thursday we'll be joined by Andrew Johnson. So I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully we're talking about chemtrails, because it does seem to be a hot topic at the minute. And no doubt we'll be discussing Mars probes, 9/11, and whatever else comes to mind. So thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back Thursday.